handle the truth. Should we or should we not follow the advice of the galactically stupid?
Maybe. Maybe not. Maybe fuck yourself.
You're all a bunch of fucking assholes. You know why? You don't have the guts to be what you want to be. You need people like me. You need people like me so you can point your fucking fingers and say, that's the bad guy.
Clearly, don't know who you're talking to, so let me clue you in. I am not in danger, Skyler. I am the danger. A guy opens his door and gets shot, and you think that of me? No. I am the one who knocks.
To another episode of the Righteous Brick Podcast. I'm your host, J.L. Covan. It is 11:26 a.m. Eastern on March 15th in the year of our Lord, 2021. Big episode today, a lot to discuss, negative, positive, and everything in between. Sitting here, Cookie hasn't eaten her breakfast yet, even at this hour, so daylight savings time or whatever the fuck just happened seems to be bothering her. Or she's intermittent fasting in solidarity with me, trying to get in shape. Day one. Today is day one of a new diet because I'm starting to book gigs, folks, so I don't want to go out on the road this spring, this summer with sweaty man boobs. We're getting in shape. We're in Rocky IV mode. Apollo has just been murdered, and I am in the Russian snow of comedy getting in shape while a bald black man yells at me, no pain. So I guess right off the start, if you are listening to this podcast and you are not yet signed up to my monthly newsletter, please do that, because that is the this show obviously is a pretty surefire way to get information from me too. This defeats the algorithm, but if you're not subscribing to this show, then you might miss a posting of the episode, and I can assure you on Facebook and Twitter, you will absolutely miss gig announcements. So sign up at the bottom of the homepage of jlcomedy.com. Just put your email in there. I only send out one a month. For instance, March, I only sent out the fundraising email for Hope for Haiti. By the way, already my goal was $5,000 in 2 months. Because of the generosity of, I know, at least some people who listen to this podcast, social media followers, etc., I think we just passed $3,000 in 2 weeks. So that's truly incredible. And I will try to thank everybody whose name I saw individually that I can. You know, some people follow me on Twitter with different names. But to everybody whose name I recognize, I will be thanking you personally. But it's a great cause, and I really, really appreciate this. There's been great generosity. Every dollar counts. Like I said, as little as $5. I'm not going to be doing any Patreon content for this podcast, as far as I can tell. So, you know, if for anybody who's ever said, where can I donate? And I always say, to a charity, not to me. I have stuff for sale. This is the charity that I'm promoting. Obviously, I'm a big fan of World Food Program, and I donated to a bunch last year. But for now, Hope for Haiti is the big dog. I think it'd be great if before April we hit 5,000, because then I will be in April donating half of my Cameo earnings to Hope for Haiti. Don't tell anybody yet. But that's going to be, you know, my contribution in addition to the funds that you guys have helped so generously raise. And I'll be posting videos of me climbing the stairs, sometimes with Cookie, just to get my 200 flights of stairs in the month of April. That's sort of the walking portion of the fundraising. So I'll try to make those funny videos. Hopefully I don't, you know, have a heart attack while climbing stairs like fat fuck that I am. But once again, I'll include for the next 2 months and a half, I'm just going to include the link in the show notes each week. No pressure, but the generous outpouring has already been very inspiring and made me feel very good, and will obviously do a lot of work. So, if we can get to 5,000 before April, that'd be phenomenal. We can obviously go above it. Like I said, my contribution will be in April. Half of my cameos, whether I do 5 cameos or 50, will go to Hope for Haiti, half of the proceeds. So always a way to get something for yourself. That's the way. If you want to get something for yourself and donate, I would recommend you do that in April. But if not, if you're not interested in a cameo or if you've already gotten one, donate this month. So thank you. As far as gigs, I can tell you right now, I'll be in South Jersey near Philadelphia on April 27th. The big comeback, the huge comeback, will be that first live show in a year and a half. So I'm very excited for that because a week ago, folks, I was listening to my friend of the show, friend in real life, Chris Lamberth. His show, by the way, is The Mundane Festival, and he has an excellent episode out this week. I say that as somebody who loves hearing comedy talk, and it's with a comedian named Ken Krantz, and they have a if you like my episode for Comedy Talk, then I think you'll enjoy this week's episode of the Mundane Festival. And the other reason you should go to the Mundane Festival this week, if I can properly thank Chris by sending over as many fans as possible to boost this week's episode, and maybe you'll become fans. He has a very soothing baritone voice. He's a talented singer. He's been on many TV shows. So why not? And he's a friend of mine and a supporter of mine. All those reasons are good enough to go support Chris Lamberth. I often hype up Stand Up with Pete Dominic and The Black Guy Who Tips as the, those were the Rod and Pete, Rod, Karen, and Pete were basically, they were the, they were the podcast government assistants to my comedy career when I was at the absolute low point in terms of just not generating new fans, not getting in the amount of work I needed to keep my career relevant. They gave me a showcase and spotlights on their podcast to their great fans. And I know many of their fans listen to my podcast. So those are like foundational, if I ever turn into a huge jerk, those would be the ones where I go, never heard of them. And that you could then say to me, wow, JL's really changed. But of course, I'm not that type of person and that type of comedian. But Chris did an incredible pair of solids for me. Now, I got a COVID vaccine, not through Chris, but he tried to help me very much with some info to get a vaccine, which was nice enough. And then he hooked me up with a comedian who had the intel and the inside info on how to get a PlayStation 5 for my nephew. So this week, I will be getting a PlayStation 5 for my nephew. So the best way, I think, to thank Chris on my behalf is to go listen, subscribe to his podcast, enjoy this week's podcast, and that would be the way to thank Chris. And it's free. Unlike Hope for Haiti, it's totally free to just go check out the Mundane Festival and click on his podcast. And I will be appearing on that podcast in the next, I think, 2 weeks to discuss Oscar nominations, which just came out this morning. But yes, I will have a PlayStation 5 this week in my possession to deliver to my nephew. And I received my first Moderna vaccine last Friday. We'll get the second shot on April 9th. And that means 2 weeks after that is April 23rd, which is the day before my 42nd birthday. So that's a pretty good birthday present. Obviously, April 23rd is seared into my memory because that's the day that Sarah Cooper's big video went up. So even in my moment of clearing the vaccine, I have to be reminded, I'm sure I'll see on social media, the 1 year anniversary of the video that, began the demise of my comedy career. sometimes it's a bad thing having a great memory. I remember being on many dates in my younger life. And if I had met a woman once, like 6 months ago, and then we were on a date, or she'd said something to me drunk when the night we met or our first night, and like a few weeks later, I'd remember it and they go, oh my God, you remember that? And I always wanted to be like, it's just, I have a really good memory. It's not that you're special. I don't want this to go. I don't want you to take more out of this than there should be. Now, sometimes you keep strong memories because they are special, but sometimes you give people the impression that they're more special to you, and you have to sort of say, I just have a great memory. You're just a regular person to me. But, you know, some things we never forget. You know, the moon landing, 9/11, Sarah Cooper going viral. There's just certain things that affect a comedian's life that you just, they sear into your memory. But just kidding. That's my sense of humor, folks. But, no, extremely excited that by my birthday, I'm obviously, as you can probably tell, going to be one of those mask-wearing cucks for the rest of 2021. Just why not play it safe? But my mom is fully vaccinated. My brother and sister-in-law are fully vaccinated. The righteous girlfriend will be fully vaccinated. Like, yeah, and when I say fully vaccinated, I mean 2 shots plus 2 weeks. So she'll be fully vaccinated by Cinco de Mayo, and her thing was like, I'm going to go out drinking with friends. And I was like, huh, well, for my birthday, we were just going to go to my brother's for a family, you know, birthday barbecue. But, yeah, no, if you want to leave, if the first thing you want to do when fully vaccinated is leave me and go drink, probably to cry about the horrible year you've had with me, then so be it. You know, that's, we're just two different people, I guess. So that's exciting. So I have now begun the process, the exciting, nerve-wracking process of contacting this morning. I sent out emails to about 30 different clubs, half of which I have a relationship with and half of which I do not. And basically, you know, made the pitch. This is how we do it. This is how we do it. No. This is the moment. Everybody, if you've been listening to me, following me, etc. And by the way, thank you if you are still listening, because the numbers for this podcast have actually jumped up the last 2 weeks. And I think that may be a result of joining Facebook. I had a few friends say, oh, I didn't realize you were still doing the podcast, because they don't follow me as closely without Twitter. And I just, it's the same thing. I realize I cost myself probably a significant amount of money by not being like fully engaged on Instagram and not having a Facebook page this last year, because it would have just, you're talking about a boost to YouTube. You're talking about a boost to album sales. You're talking about just another reach, for everything, but so be it. But I started emailing clubs, and that's what this has all been for. As good an impersonator as I am, and the Andrew Cuomo, a neighbor of mine recognized me the other day. You know, we say hello once in a while, and he stopped me in the hallway and he said, "It is you." And I go, "Huh?" He goes, "You were on Fox News." And I go, "What?" He goes, "Yeah, for your Cuomo." And I was like, "My Cuomo is getting me recognized. That's pretty awesome." Yeah, it was on like a Fox 5 article where they just included it, making fun of the blanket. But this is what all this has been for. All the years of doing a podcast, starting a YouTube channel, this all, what, you know, a rising tide will lift all ships. I didn't know what could hit for me. I hoped that everything would hit, but it turned out to be, you know, viral video impressions that made my name beyond just being a good working comedian. And now the test of that is, do my social media numbers and my press coverage and my stand-up skills get these clubs to give me a shot at headlining? And I hope, I know some will. I hope a lot do, because I didn't start stand-up in 2003 because I thought one day I could be a great podcaster. And I didn't start it because I thought the world needed my impressions, although that is how I really kind of started as a stand-up. But it was just, I started stand-up and got serious about it because I wanted to be a stand-up comedian. And the better I got at it, the more I enjoyed it. As I started traveling, the more I wanted that. There are many comics who view it as a burden or view it as a stepping stone or a skill set. To me, it is the goal. You know, the headlining stand-up comedy clubs is the goal. Theaters is the goal. I will gladly do other things. I would love to be on a sketch show or have my own sketch show. That's not to diminish the other things I work hard on. But the holy grail for me is stand-up. So I hope you will subscribe to my monthly newsletter, as I consider it the most guaranteed way to get info on shows. But I'm already going to be in South Jersey on April 27th, and May 13th to the 15th, I will be on a selection of shows in the Washington, D.C. area, which, for Christ's sakes, a liberal city where I went to law school and where I got famous and was covered in the Washington Post, I better put asses in the seats in D.C. for sure. But very excited about that. And now I emailed the booker in the Utah Comedy Club, who was very nice and offered me a feature spot, but told me it might not be worth he offered me a one night headline spot with a door deal, but he thought it probably wouldn't be worth my time. But I hope now, both with my reach and being the world's most famous Utah jazz fan, title I'm making up myself. I would really hope that I could get like a nice weekend in Utah, which is a beautiful state. And I would then obviously stay for an extra day and go to a jazz game. that's one of those gigs where I say, this is a paid vacation. Like, this is a net zero vacation where it's like, oh, I took a trip to Utah where I wanted to go and it cost me nothing. Like, I'm not looking at the comedy club as a payday. That would be one of those, like, good, I get to go to Utah for free. Is like my, I just have to do comedy while I'm there. So yes, that's just the process now. We're now, as I am going to be fully vaccinated in a month and a week, we enter the most exciting and nerve-wracking time, because this is, this feels like a playoff game now. Like, I've spent, I had a 16-year preseason. Then I had 2020, which was a record-setting regular season for me. And now we're in the playoffs, where it's like, playoffs? Now it's a thing where I figure out, is the world ready for me? Now gather round. There's a new JL in town. So we'll see. So exciting, nerve-wracking things. But, I feel like now at least the next phase of this interminable journey known as stand-up comedy and this painful journey known as COVID are entering new positive phases. So as much as I don't want to be positive, I'm trying to be positive, because I just felt good contacting comedy clubs is the point. That alone felt just good. Like, I was getting back to what I wanted to do with a new sense of hope and power. And we'll see. Maybe I'll be back here in 3 weeks going, I quit. I'm done with comedy. It's over. After DC, I'm running in front of an Acela train and that's it. But hopefully not, guys. Hopefully not. But thank you, everybody. A lot of people seem to enjoy the Dane Cook defense that I did last week. This week, it will be Steve Little. Okay? And if you don't know who Steve Little is, that's okay. We're going to try and rectify that with this podcast. But Steve Little is how I will conclude this episode. Last night were the Grammys. Let's talk Grammys and Oscars and some insults for comedy fans. And then we'll get to Steve Little. And then I'll go have my... By the way, see, hear this positive energy? I haven't even had my green tea and nuts yet. This is just sending a bunch of comedy emails gave me this feeling of hope and energy. So that's good. Grammys last night. There are certain things you can't say on Twitter, and that's why I have a podcast. Trevor Noah was fine, I guess. He gives off sort of like, at least when hosting a music show where he's a little out of his depth, I think, in terms of coolness, he gives off, nice uncle who teaches and has heard of these artists because his students reference them. He gives off that kind of like nice but a little bit out of his depth geeky uncle when it comes to he's a comedian and that's his, but like some of the stuff I just was like, all right, well, whatever. He's a nice guy, I guess. Beyonce set a record. She tied Quincy Jones. She became the most decorated female artist of all time at the Grammys and tied Quincy Jones for the most ever. And, one of the things, you don't want to rain on a parade. That's what this podcast is for. I didn't rain on anybody's Twitter parade, but I'm going to rain on it now. When Beyonce got that, I was just like, first of all, she's dressed like Audrey from The Little Shop of Horrors, but that's okay. Nothing she can do is ever wrong, so that's okay, but I did not dig her outfit, okay? And the other thing I noticed is that, we give out like 800 awards now, right? Like, I feel like the stats are a little juiced. Like, Quincy Jones, that's why, like, when Michael Jackson won 8 awards at the 1983 or 84 Grammys, it was like, there were like 10 awards total. Now it's like, best contemporary pop soul country duo with electronic influence on a TikTok video goes to DaBaby. And there's like a 9-hour pre-show to hand out awards. Like, Beyonce's daughter won for some video, I guess. So it's like, you start reading that and you're like, yeah, I feel like Quincy Jones 28 are a much heavier action-packed 28 than the Beyonce 28. It just goes to show Beyonce's only won, I think, the main award once. And I know 2013, I think, was the year she was really robbed. I like that. That's the last Beyonce album. That's what's so funny is like, I have a couple of Beyonce albums, but the last one I got was that one, that like secret album she released in 2013 with Pretty Hurts. I think that was like the first track on it, but I like that album a lot. But that, I just don't listen to like new music that much, but I remember getting that album and be like, oh, this is good. That was the one that people thought should have won and it didn't. But I haven't like heard, I guess I watched Lemonade, you know, because that was such a big deal. I watched that special after, you know, and that was praised, but then I think she lost to Adele. But I don't know, I was just laughing going like, I feel like that's like Grammys are like the three pointers now. It's like, yeah, Ray, like Steph Curry, like we're going to get to a point where like Joe Ingles has hit more three pointers than Reggie Miller. But it's like, if Reggie Miller played today, the game is different. So I was just laughing going like, she's got 28 and Quincy Jones has 28. Now Beyonce, to be fair, is a legend, like a living legend. She is at that Michael Jackson, Madonna sort of status. So it's like, I think she would have ended up being in the conversation even if she had come up during a more, you know, sane Grammys period where there were only 80 awards handed out instead of 460. But still, it kind of made me chuckle to be like, oh, she's tied with Quincy Jones. That seems ridiculous. But anyway, love Beyonce. Don't come after me, Beehive. And then I thought, the other thing I couldn't share because it was too short for a tweet, too long for a tweet, was the WAP performance. You can't say WAP because then I feel like I'm insulting Italians. The WAP performance with Cardi B and Megan Thee Stallion, where they were scissoring each other on stage and, you know, shaking their asses and getting muted every other word. And it is one of those things where it's like, thanks to Ben Shapiro and Tucker Carlson, you're like not allowed to even criticize or question the decency of a performance by them, because then you will just be committing violence against black women and you'll just be a hateful conservative like cuck bitch. But and part of me was just like, I kept watching all the left people on my Twitter, like the really good, they were like preemptively going, that was a powerful performance. Tucker Carlson and Ben Shapiro can fuck themselves if they didn't like that. And it reminded me of that episode of South Park where like all the progressive parents in South Park, like the kids were like, Mr. Garrison and Mr. Slave are doing some really shady shit in class. And the parents were like, how can you be so hateful? They're living their truth. Meanwhile, Mr. Slave and Mr. Garrison were like fisting each other and putting gerbils up Mr. Slave's ass in front of the class. And then they decided, the school kept doubling down and going, these kids aren't prepared for this. That means we have to teach them younger. So you literally have Mr. Garrison, top 10 hardest I've ever laughed in my entire life was when I saw that episode for the first time. And it's like an early season of South Park, like a season 5 kind of episode. When Mr. Garrison is showing the preschool South Park characters how to put on a condom and he uses his mouth and puts it over the banana, I laughed like violently when I saw that. And by the end of the episode, the parents then see what Mr. Garrison and Mr. Slave are actually doing in class. And they're like horrified because they were just assuming it was like some sort of like, you know, bigoted, immature, ignorant kind of anti-gay feeling that was having the kids questioning their gay teacher. When it turns out it was like, no, some things you can be like, whatever. Like on Keep My Enemies Closer, I talked about Grindr, which was a fairly new app at the time when that album came out. And I kept saying, there were just things where I was like, is there a double standard here? Because definitely if straight people were meeting like strangers in like public bathrooms to fuck, we'd be like, dude, you're a scumbag. But when it's two gay dudes, it's like, God, they're free. It's so great that they can finally be free and live their truth. That was the premise of the joke on Keep My Enemies Closer, ahead of its time. But when it came to like the South Park episode, they were obviously before me and they were pointing out that like sometimes like you don't have to just automatically defend everything as like powerful, and as long as Ben Shapiro hates it, you must support it. And that's what I saw on my Twitter timeline. It was like this preemptive, like, I'm actually loving this performance more than you. Mostly white people doing this, but it was like, I love this performance more than you. And if you don't like it, you're obviously anti-black women. And I was watching it going, I mean, they're clothed and they're muting all the bad words, but I'm like, this is, you know, this is not so much dancing as it is like half a rap song that's muted with, you know, fairly, you know, things that would get you a hard PG-13 rating. And the language would probably get you an R rating if this was a movie, but it's on primetime network television. And I just thought, I don't know, maybe I'm just getting old fashioned. It's not that I don't find Megan and Cardi B, I can't really stand to hear her talk, to be honest, but it's not that I don't find them attractive in a stripper porn kind of way. But at the same time, I'm like, this feels like less performance and more look at us, be provocative, and I dare you to say something. And, you know, there's plenty of people to back them up on multiple fronts, both legitimate and sort of virtue signaling ways. But I just thought that might have been a little much, but okay, it's a different time. Maybe I'm just becoming old-fashioned. But it's always the aggressive progressive coming out and just like midway through the performance just wants to have that first take of like, you know what, if you're against Cardi B eating Megan Thee Stallion's ass on TV while saying the N-word, you obviously are just a right-wing propagandist and you can fuck off and unfollow. Yes, queen. That's all I thought about that. It reminded me of the South Park episode a little bit where it's like, at what point can you like say something without being on Ben Shapiro's side? can you have an opinion? Like, do I have to only be an old relative of yours in the black church to express an opinion on this? Is that the only way I will be given legitimacy by aggressive progressives for my opinion on this? Anyway, I thought that was just interesting. Overall, the Grammys were very long, but congratulations to all the winners. I like Dua Lipa. She is a real... I don't want to say that Demi Lovato has competition, because she doesn't, but Dua Lipa, as a tall fella, that's a tall drink of European disco Molly. I don't know how you take Molly. I don't do drugs, folks, okay? I'm a real fucking square. My drug is sending out comedy emails and Entenmann's chocolate chip cookies, and I'm all out of Entenmann's chocolate chip cookies. So that's that. That's Grammys. Oscar nominations. I don't really want to go through them that much. We're good. Like I said, if you follow Chris Lamberth, if you support his podcast, I should be on there in the next week or two. Let's just look at the Best Picture nominees. Now, I'm on the record. My three favorite films of the year, none of them got nominated. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, it did. Oh, there's like a little unnecessary break. Okay, one of my favorite films of the year got nominated. Now, to be fair, I have not seen The Father, which I very much want to see. I have not seen Minari, Nomadland, or Promising Young Woman. But I have seen Judas and the Black Messiah. I have seen Mank. I have seen Sound of Metal. And I have seen The Trial of Chicago 7. My three favorite films of the year, in order, were The 40-Year-Old Virgin on Netflix, Borat 2, and Sound of Metal, in that order. Now, I haven't seen all of them, as I just told you, but those are my three favorite, movies. And different movies, obviously, but two of them had a good amount of humor in them. But 40-Year-Old Virgin, I was so surprised at how much I enjoyed that. I thought it was such a great story and so funny and so good. Like, I think, is her name Radha Black? I hope she has like a... If you watch that movie and you listen to this podcast, you'll see that like that movie basically felt like a soulmate sharing her story. Just it was so honest and so funny and so... It was so perfect. I genuinely felt like that movie was almost perfect. There was never a moment where I said, dragging, or where I said, did they have to end it that way? Or the whole thing was really awesome to me. Borat 2. Bruno is still my favorite Sacha Baron Cohen movie. I think that movie is so over-the-top funny. But Borat 2, I really, really liked. And then Sound of Metal. I didn't think it was a great year at all for movies based on many of the ones I saw. I thought there were a lot of like good movies, but I didn't even see the Christopher Nolan one, Tenet, yet, which I know isn't nominated for any of the big awards. But, you know, Christopher Nolan, you know, is second only to David Fincher on my list of like modern directors that I'm a big fan of. You know, 40-Year-Old Virgin and Borat 2 did not get nominated. I can tell you that I thought The Trial of Chicago 7, I said it on this podcast, I believe. I thought that movie stunk. Like, I'm a big Aaron Sorkin fan. I own a bunch of Aaron Sorkin movies. I saw and loved To Kill a Mockingbird on Broadway, humble brag. But, you know, I feel like Aaron Sorkin's the kind of guy, like, a lot of people love that movie Molly's Game. And I thought Molly's Game was, like, good but needed an editor. Like, I thought it was too long. And then I realized it was Aaron Sorkin wrote and directed it, and he wrote and directed Trial of Chicago 7, and he's an incredibly, insanely talented writer. Like, he wrote The West Wing, he wrote Charlie Wilson's War, he wrote A Few Good Men, he wrote The Social Network. But I think one of the big things about all those great, great kind of legendary things that he's done is he had an A-list director working with him. And I feel like when you're somebody of that level of talent, you have every reason to believe in your writing. But if you're directing your own piece, who's going to tell you to edit it? Who's going to tell you? No, you're in charge. So like, if you wrote it, if you're Aaron Sorkin and you wrote The Trial of the Chicago 7, you're going to be like, well, I'm a great writer. I'm an Oscar winner writer. Like, look at all that I've done. I can trust my own instincts. And I feel like his best work has always been with A-list directors, A Few Good Men, Rob Reiner, Social Network, David Fincher, and I believe Charlie Wilson's War, which is hugely underrated. Like, I shouldn't say underrated. I think it's well-rated, but undervalued in terms of movies. I think that movie is just phenomenal. I think that was Mike Nichols, if I'm not mistaken. So those are like Hall of Fame level directors working with him. So that you're getting a genius writing, working with a genius on the other end that he has to respect and compromise with. And I think that's why you get these great movies. Molly's Game, I think, was definitely better, much better than Trial of Chicago 7, but I still felt like it dragged a little bit and could have used someone editing it or trimming it. But if you're Aaron Sorkin and you wrote a 2.5-hour movie, why are you going to edit your own words? You, by writing them, you basically said, I think this is worth filming. But man, Chicago 7, as a huge fan of people in that movie and of Aaron Sorkin, I thought it stunk. Like, for real. I'm shocked. I think, you know, and I heard this a podcast I would also recommend if you just want pre-Oscar talk was Bill Simmons had Wesley Morris on last week on the Bill Simmons podcast. And man, Wesley Morris was basically just speaking my language the whole episode, but he also was just like, Trial of Chicago 7 was terrible. He was like, what the hell was that? But they discussed that, like, without theaters dictating some of the popular appeal, that streaming services can basically tell you what to watch based on their algorithm. So, like, you know, certain movies like One Night in Miami, I thought was very good. I enjoyed that movie. I didn't think it was great, but like a lot of movies this year, I thought it was good. But when you turn on Amazon Prime, it was like the first like three things were like banner ads for it. So they if you can only watch Netflix and Amazon Prime and Disney Plus for like and Hulu for your movies this year, well then those platforms can basically kind of guide you to those movies incessantly, which seems to have happened with like Trial of Chicago 7 and some of the other movies. But I will be watching Minari and Nomadland very soon. I will get The Father when it comes available, I think, in a week or two on demand. Mank, once again, a disappointing year for movies that I really... From movies from people that I consider, like, elite Mount Rushmore in their field. Like, David Fincher is my favorite director. Aaron Sorkin, I think, is just... You probably have to just consider him the best screenwriter going these days. And Mank, I found boring. I actually liked Citizen Kane more than Mank, and I was surprised because Citizen Kane, I thought, oh, I'm just going to watch this as like a classic, and it's going to kind of bore me, but you got to watch it because it's considered this great movie. I actually kind of really enjoyed Citizen Kane for what it is. And Mank, I was just like, I think Righteous Girlfriend liked Mank more than me. I was bored. But Mank, I would say I was found myself bored. Trial of Chicago 7, I actually thought sucked. Like, which is so weird to say because I'm such a big fan. It wasn't just like, maybe it was an ambitious turn. Maybe sometimes that's what happens. He tried something ambitious, but who am I? You know, the fucking Oscars just gave it a bunch of nominations. So what do I know? Judas and the Black Messiah, it was also a very good movie. I don't think it's a great movie, but it was very good. Like, there were a lot of very good movies this year, and I wonder if it would have been different if theaters had been open, if things were postponed or pushed off that might have generated more interest or buzz. But that's all I'm going to talk. Well, I'll save the conversation for Chris's podcast that we'll eventually do, I'm sure. Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. Sorry, I am scanning these things. Oh, Andra Day for the United States versus Billie Holiday. I watched that. It is a classic Oscar performance. She sings as Billie Holiday, which is great. She gets naked a lot. She endures violence and drugs. It's a tragic story. It kind of tragic porn, that movie felt like. She is very good in it. I thought the movie stunk. I actually hated the movie, but I didn't. You have to respect the performance within the movie. But whatever. I don't know. This, like, I gotta say, it's a great year if you're like a, you know, indie filmmaker, I guess, and stuff like that. But man, I didn't really enjoy movies this much this year, and part of that might be I didn't really enjoy much this year. That's certainly possible. I can admit that. But yeah, I was okay with The Five Bloods not getting nominated. I didn't like that movie. Like, and I'm a Spike Lee fan. I just felt like, I don't know. I don't know this year. I feel like everything went crazy and people were like, I love this. But, and I was like, I don't know about that. So yeah, overall, I would say a decent year of movies that just didn't make me happy or excite me. That said, The Father, Minari, and Nomadland are all on my list to watch over the next 2 weeks. So maybe I will amend that. That's all I want to talk about the Oscars right now. So let's, before I leave you and go get my tea and nuts, I'm going to tell you right now, we're going to talk about somebody very important to me in comedy. Not because I know the person, but because, once again, if you're listening to this episode for the first time, special announcement before I forget, while I have your attention. Special announcement. This week on Making Podcasts Great Again, we have a little guest called Richard Marks. Richard Marks is joining us as the guest on Making Podcasts Great Again this week. So if you're not a regular listener of that show, which I take great pride in and has been very successful over the last year, you might want to check it out. And I urge you to subscribe. I do. I think you will enjoy it. We're doing a special Patreon bonus episode for everybody, all levels of our Patreons, with Brett Kavanaugh this Wednesday. A special St. Patrick's Day episode. So we really try to make it a fun comedy politics podcast, obviously mostly through the lens of Donald Trump, but we introduce other people, and now we're lining up celebrity guests. I also have a confirmation, speaking of Aaron Sorkin, from the great Bradley Whitford to appear on the show this month. So Emmy winner from Handmaid's Tale and West Wing, and you may recall him, if you don't watch those shows, you may recall him as the dad in Get Out. So he's joining the podcast this month. So we are lining up some like A-list level guests to join the show, and I'm excited about that. So I hope you will, subscribe to this podcast, and please, once again, we had much less engagement on the Podomatic, understandably, because there was sort of a call to action 2 weeks ago as far as giving me your specific feedback, but I do hope it helps the algorithm and engagement of the show if you treat the Podomatic page for this podcast as like a chat room. It's one way, but at least I can get some feedback. If you have questions or comments, I can share them on the show. But any thoughts that you have, basically what I hope you'll do, everybody who listens to this episode. I know it won't happen, but I'm hoping. Most likely most of you are on Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter. Many of you are on all of them. Some of you are on only one. Very few of you, I suspect, are on none. I would just ask that if you like this episode or want to promote this episode, that you, A, leave a comment on the Podomatic page this week and just treat that like the chat room or a message board to me on your thoughts, opinions of each episode, and that you share the episode, retweet or Facebook share, or there's a woman, Charlene, I believe, who is an all-star at sharing my content. So I want to thank you because I know you listen. You share both podcasts, you share videos, and it's really appreciated. So since I'm giving you a shout out, I also donated to Hope for Haiti. So you've been an A+ fan, and I thank you. So there. See, you might get a shout out if you're truly awesome. But I don't want to say that too much because there were many people who donated generously and share also. But she just came to mind because she sort of shares the episodes like clockwork, and it's very appreciated. So maybe this month, because Making Podcasts Great Again is going to have another great year this year. We've got great guests. We've got a five-digit listening base. But my plan is to end that podcast at the end of this year. Could it be resurrected if Trump runs again? Of course. And that would be fun. Not for the country, but for the podcast. But this is going to be the podcast that, as my career goes forward, that's going to be fun. And I will bring impressions onto this show. And you'll just get updates. And who knows, maybe if I only have one podcast, we do two episodes a week. And one can be more serious, one can be more fun. But the point is, this podcast goes as long as my comedy career goes. But Making Podcasts Great Again is sort of a finite project. So I would hope that maybe this week, if you think about it, if you're an infrequent listener, if it's your first time listening, if you're a diehard, always subscribe, always listen, maybe share this episode on whatever platform, maybe in your Facebook story, in your Instagram stories, or share the link I post on Facebook, or retweet on Twitter with a quote, you know, recommending it, or if you like, just whatever. Much appreciated. Cost you nothing, obviously. So any help you can do to promote this, because this is, you know, this is, like I said with the emails today, this is the point where I'm now really trying to move my Trump fame and my impression fame into more. And sharing this podcast, you know, getting this podcast up into the thousands instead of a thousand, getting this podcast a few thousand listeners, and getting my newsletter a few thousand instead of a thousand, a few thousand subscribers is really the way to help the career move forward beyond Trump, which of course I really want to do, and I think many of you want me to as well, and have faith in me to do so. So thank you. So big announcements, all free. But now I want to talk, as I had said, I felt like I did do a lot of complaining about my comedy career. One complaint was definitely when I posted last night a tweet when Her won for best song of the year. And I posted a Michael Bluth gif. Michael Bluth, of course, Jason Bateman from the greatest comedy I've ever seen, Arrested Development, Fox seasons only. I almost got into an argument with somebody who was trying to tell me that the Netflix seasons were low-key genius. And I was like, well, they were high-key pieces of shit. I don't know what low-key they were doing, but on the high-key, they fucking sucked and were a disgrace to the three seasons that were on Fox, which for my money, which by the way is a lot better than it was a year ago, is the greatest TV comedy ever. Arrested Development. I mean, in 11 out of 10 in every way. Writing, casting, story. It's a beautiful piece of comedy work. And I posted a picture of Michael Bluth saying Her, which is a running joke about his son's girlfriend. So I posted that with the hashtag Grammys, and then, of course, had to get scolded by various people saying, yes, Her, just respect the talent. And I was like, oh, God, you don't get to tell me, a fairly literate pop culture comedian, like, this is what it bothers me so much. You don't get my joke, but you feel very comfortable lecturing me about pop culture, but you don't get my joke. But you assume that you're defending a victimized black woman. That seems to be the theme of my comedy career over the last year, is that fun times with 3% of the people constantly coming to the rescue of black women who don't need rescuing. You didn't get the joke, and now you're reprimanding me for a joke you didn't get. So that was fun. But I do a lot of complaining about comedy, right?
Right.
So I thought, as I said a couple of weeks ago, why don't I start doing a series of things where I praise and defend and uplift comedians who either, or comedy things, not just comedians, funny things, whether they be people, movies, shows, that I think don't get their due. So instead of focusing on me not getting my due, I thought, why don't I put my prodigious complaining talents in defense of other people? So this week's person is Steve Little. Now, you may be saying, who's Steve Little? Or maybe you already Googled him when I first mentioned him. Steve Little is a comedic actor who's best known as Stevie Janowski on the show Eastbound and Down. I looked up his Wikipedia, and just, I won't give you everything, but he's a member of the Groundlings, which is the sort of famous Los Angeles improv troupe that was a feeder for a while for SNL. And I'm going to say he's been in two things that I can tell you about. And my whole point about mentioning Steve Little is I think his performance on Eastbound and Down as Stevie Janowski, I don't know that there is, obviously Sacha Baron Cohen is going to be in this conversation for, like, you know, his brazen nudity and some of the, I mean, there is a scene in Borat, the first Borat, which is just, it's so appalling that it's funny, but it's also not funny. It's just so fucking disgusting. But you kind of respect the outright bravery to have, you know, a 300-pound obese little man just 69ing you while you're fighting is a level of bravery and disgusting conduct in comedy that's very tough to beat. But I think pound for pound, Steve Little in Eastbound and Down, his work, the four seasons of work he did on that show, could be on my Mount Rushmore of TV comedy performances. I am not kidding. If you are not familiar with Eastbound and Down, it's on HBO Max. I think season one is a masterpiece. It's a very vulgar comedy, by the way. But season one is an outright masterpiece. Season two is really funny and is actually more of a showcase, I think, for Steve Little than it is for Danny McBride. Season three, I think, is probably my least favorite, and season four is pretty solid. But his performance in that show is, there are certain actors and performances where I get enraged on their behalf. I don't know Steve Little's life. He could be a very happy family man. He could be very content with his career. But his work in Eastbound and Down was so damn good that I'm just like, oh, if that happened to me, if I put out that Emmy-winning, like bold-ass, hilarious character work in a comedy, and nobody was hollering about me and nobody was boosting me, I'd be furious. So this is me on his behalf projecting. This is me projecting. He is probably a much happier person than me. But he is so good as Stevie Janowski. And then the real kick in the nuts was I kept saying, where's Steve? You know, Danny McBride is a big star. He's in a lot of movies and TV shows. He's in another HBO show. He's in his third HBO show, I think, because he was in Vice Principals. I think each one of his shows becomes a worse version of Eastbound and Down. Eastbound and Down to me is just so goddamn good. But Vice Principals, I thought was funny, but the strength of the show I thought was Walton Goggins. And then I know a lot of people like, is it Righteous Gemstones? I always say Mighty Gemstones, but I think it's Righteous Gemstones. I feel like the same way I would describe Talladega Nights, the Will Ferrell, Sacha Baron Cohen, John C. O'Reilly movie. To me, I always thought Talladega Nights was lazy. I mean, it's funny, but I thought it felt like a movie where they were like, we have Sacha Baron Cohen, John C. Reilly, and Will Ferrell, like all at like peaks of their power, and we're doing a NASCAR comedy. Do we even need to write something that good? Won't it just be sort of hilarious? Just the concept alone, isn't that like an A-plus comedy? And it felt to me like a B-minus. That's just my opinion, but I felt like sometimes you get these people who are insanely talented and then it's like disappointing. And that's kind of what I felt like with my Righteous Gemstones. I was like, oh, I like these people, but this, it feels like, for me, a lot of people like it, so I know I'm in the minority, I think. But for me, it just felt like televangelists, Danny McBride, Walton Goggins, John Goodman, the funny guy who's actually, I think, the best part of the show, at least in terms of the effort he gives, the little guy from Workaholics, Adam Devine. I thought that show was going to be a grand slam, and I ended up kind of feeling like Talladega Nights disappointed. Like it felt to me like, I mean, we're taking these talented guys and doing televangelism. How can it not work? And for me, it's like, I don't know. I wasn't a big fan, but that's just me. I know a lot of you like it. So, but I kept wondering what Steve Little was going to do after Eastbound and Down. And then he showed up on a show on Fox called The Grindr. The Grindr could get its own segment, and it very well may. I may do a segment next week where I talk about The Grindr and Hello Ladies. Like I talk about, I'm gonna talk, that's it, I've decided. Next week, we're gonna talk about comedies that only got one season. And I can tell you right now, the three shows I'm gonna talk about, because I had them on a list before. The Grindr, Onion Sports Dome on Comedy Central, and Hello Ladies on HBO. So there's your three shows I'm going to discuss in next week's comedy segment about things that deserve a better chance. But he was on The Grindr. Now, he didn't get to flex too much on The Grindr, but just the fact that he was on that show, if you don't know what it was about, it was basically about a small town law firm, father-son law firm, and the older brother of the family became a very successful actor played by Rob Lowe, the, you know, incredibly handsome, never aging Rob Lowe. He played a TV lawyer called The Grindr, but the show gets canceled and he moves back home. And it is so funny. Like, cause in other words, the gist of it is like each episode, basically people treating Rob Lowe, the handsome TV lawyer, as like more of a reputable source for legal information than the brother who actually like works as a lawyer and went to law school. And Stevie Janowski worked in the law firm. Stevie, I always call him Stevie Janowski. Steve Little was somebody working in the law firm. But the show got canceled after like a handful of episodes. I blame the redundancy of the much worse show was starring John Stamos, which was the lead-in for The Grindr. And I think the problem with that was people were just like, okay, so two super handsome, ageless 80s icons have shows back-to-back? Eh. And if The Grindr had been the lead-in, I think you might have had more success because The Grindr was legitimately really funny. But I think the lead-in of the John Stamos show, which was not nearly as good as The Grindr, hurt The Grindr. But Steve Little was in The Grindr, so it made it all the more frustrating for the show to be canceled because I was like, oh no, he was like, this was his next opportunity. This was his next shot to be in a funny-ass show that he could once again expand his career and reach. And now I think he does like a voice for like a Cartoon Network show, if I'm not mistaken. And once again, I can't project my unhappiness on him. He might be very content. But I can't imagine somebody being on two tremendous comedies. One gets canceled, which is the nature of the business. But the other, he actually got to really flex. And I've always said this, if I ever get a show made, if I ever write a comedy or a series, I want Steve Little to be in that show. I want there to be a part for Steve Little. So I don't know why I felt the need to do this, but Steve Little, he deserves, like Dane Cook last week, Steve Little this week. You know, most of you have all heard of Dane Cook, and many of you might not have even known who Steve Little is, even after I explained, but many of you go, oh, that's Stevie Janowski's real name. But I hope great things for Steve Little, and if I ever get to write a show, I would hope to contact his agent and tell him I've got a great part for Steve Little. I've been a big fan for a long time. So do yourselves a favor. Get into Eastbound and Down. The first season is only 6 episodes. You know, Kenny fucking Powers. And, you know, just one of my favorite early exchanges on that show is when he walks up to Kenny's girlfriend, or soon-to-be girlfriend, spoiler, ex-girlfriend, soon-to-be girlfriend again, but walks up to Kenny Powers' ex, April, and goes, hey, April, who are all these motherfuckers? And she just goes, Stevie, this is the church group? I don't know why it made me laugh, but he was always trying to be a tough guy. He's such a goober. He's a goober music teacher, but who wants to be tough so bad. And there's a scene in episode 2 of season 2 where he's having sex with a black prostitute that is a work of beauty. It's a work of art. the point is, go watch Eastbound and Down, and God love you if you can find The Grindr, because I don't think he doesn't really get a chance to do that much, I think, because it was only canceled after, I don't know, I want to say like 8 episodes, but Eastbound and Down, he really gets to soar. So if you haven't watched Eastbound and Down and you can stomach foul language, I strongly recommend it. And the low-key star, if I can use that phrase, the low-key star of Eastbound and Down is Steve Little. So good luck, Steve Little. I hope you listen to the podcast. You probably don't, but we're here for you. So thank you for listening, guys. Thank you for, joining this show once again. I hope you will subscribe and not just listen sporadically. And I hope this week, I know I gave you a few things to do, but if you can donate to Hope for Haiti, much appreciated. Any dollar amount counts. And if you can, or you have, or you can't, please, if you enjoy this podcast, share it on your preferred social media platform and leave a comment on the Podomatic page. Follow the show there, leave a comment, because that helps boost its algorithm rating on Podomatic and maybe gets it seen by a few more people on their site. Other than that, sign up for my newsletter, because shows are rehappening. A fully vaccinated JL is going to hopefully be coming to a city near you in 2021. So feels good to say that, or at least hope that. It feels good to know that I'm getting vaccinated and that my nephew's going to have his PlayStation 5 by Easter. You know, God resurrected Jesus, and I'm resurrecting the PlayStation 5. So thank you, guys. Keep sharing and supporting my content. I do deeply appreciate it. I complain a lot about bad fans, dummies on social media, but I hope you do realize how deeply I appreciate and have enjoyed growing a fan base and having people enjoy the things that I've been working very hard on for a long time without necessarily the feedback that I thought it deserved. And now I'm getting some of that. So for all my complaining, I very much appreciate you guys listening, supporting, and hopefully we can see each other in person for a show and have a light beverage afterwards. So be safe, get vaccinated if you can. Thank you. And lastly, of course, check out, say a thank you to my friend Chris Lamberth by subscribing to his podcast, The Mundane Festival. Good episode this week, and I should be coming up in the next week or two on the show myself. So thank you, guys. Have a great week. Check out Richard Marks on Making Podcasts Great Again, and I will see you next Tuesday.